This is RSVNB Update, episode 642, recorded Thursday, October 19th, 2017. Dimension of the Damned, Rebalance. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tycho is back this week. Welcome back.
Hello, Shane. I'm glad to be back.
Yes, indeed. It's good to be here. We got lots to talk about going on what's going to be a roller coaster of an RSBNB Update episode.
Oh, yeah, believe it.
I think the last time we had one of these was Menafos. And also, in line with that is Tanis. You always seem to be here for the roller coaster.
I always seem to. Do I bring the drama? Or just the.
Oh, yes.
I don't know.
Tanis, of course, from RSBNB and former one of our great writers there. So, Dimension of the Damned week. So, this update came out on Monday. And you know, it was, it's a very interesting, thing that Jagex is testing here. And I say testing for a number of reasons. One of which, because it's the first time they've ever done anything like this. And the second is there were a number of changes along the way for something that was designed to be, let's just say very competitive and has real world prizes associated with it. So, we'll get to all that in just a wee bit. But of course, in addition to that, patch notes, a little bit on the drop rates for a couple of bosses, and some tech news that you guys are all probably wondering about, you guys might have heard about throughout the week. We'll provide all the information needed to keep your wireless connection safe and secure. But in the meantime, you guys ready to go talk about Dimension of the Damned?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm excited. I'm about to explain.
I'm going in.
All right. So Dimension of the Damned came out on the 16th, and, you know, it's a very interesting thing, because in some ways it's a successor to Darkscape, but in others it's not, because it's entirely different. So Dimension of the Damned is the PVM-only RuneScape survival mode filled with zombies and whatnot, which, you know, you would expect because you're in the month of October, and everyone probably likes a good zombie survival game every now and then, depending on how much gore you want to see with it. And I think Jagex does a good job on making it not too gory in the sense of some other ones, like Left 4 Dead, for example, right?
So, that's a good one.
Yeah. Different than Darkscape, players start out with max stats, but you need to produce your own gear. So you have max stats across the board, and that is to help you gather resources throughout the game. And in some ways, it's a fresh economy, because, you know, there's no grand exchange where you can go pick up a rune plate body and a rune sword and off you go. You gotta actually go farm those resources from the wilderness and whatnot.
Well,
Shane, I've got a lot of talk about exactly that.
Exactly.
Topic.
Yeah, exactly.
Very limited.
We saw
though,
pictures.
We
saw pictures.
Yes.
You kill zombies.
Just wanted to. The whole pre-show, we never brought this up. It's only in the free-to-play areas.
Yeah, so I noticed
extremely
that.
Extremely limited on what resources you're gathering and making.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to get that out there, because, like, we didn't think about it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of puts a new perspective on what you can do with RuneScape in that area, right? So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Anyways, a little bit on the mechanics before we get too far into it. You can catch zombieism from bites, and of course, when you're fighting the zombies, and you can stave off zombieism by taking antidotes and or consuming modified shrimp prior to battle. Of course, they go with shrimp because that's the level one food and regular RS. So let's have modified shrimp that are going to be great. I found that was a nice little touch. You can go to Z-Kirk's shop in Falador, and you can buy the modified shrimp and other items using bottle corks, and bottle corks is the currency in this version of the game. And you can also pick these up from supply drops that spawn randomly throughout the world. And you have 3 minutes to find the crate. Falador is the safe zone where the dead don't rise. And basically, you'll be escorted back there by White Knights if you become inactive. And you respawn there if you die. If you have the zombieism, though, you can't enter Falador. And you can use all the banks throughout Gilinor within the free world. So there's a brief little rundown about how Dimension of the Damned works in the general area. So before we go
Don't forget that it costs to use the bank.
To bank, yes. It's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll save that for the gripe section of this.
but before we get too far into the mechanics and things it does well or things it might not do well, Dimension of the Damned is only playable in NXT.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think that's really good.
I found that to be a great decision to make because obviously it uses skyboxes and filters and, you know, you want to have players having the best possible experience they can. And, you know, you might not be able to change the sky as well as you can in NXT as you can in Java, or rather the other way around. So that's good. And I think this is also another great way to get people to try NXT who have not tried NXT before, because I know there are so many people out there who tried NXT, you know, the first couple months after it was released and it crashed or it was buggy and it didn't work. So they just swore off it and, you know, are sticking with the Java client until Jagex pries it out of their cold, dead hands. But in reality, NXT is the future and Java is going to go away at some point. So, you know, there needs to be a reason to use NXT. And I mean, if people want to play Dimension of the Damned, then there you go.
And they are continuing to improve NXT. I mean, we will have a look at the patch notes later about that, but people need to realize that NXT is a lot better than it was at release.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, I've had friends that didn't use NXT because it made their computer loud. It's like, no, you just... might want a bigger fan there, bud.
That's yeah. Yeah. So. All right. So.
Who needs a call engine?
So, Monday, Dimension of the Damned. I logged in. I tried this. It was, I'm going to say, I spent about an hour, give or take, in the area, and it was too easy. And, you know, I basically walked from Falador north. I walked to the Taverly Mountain, and then I walked all the way east through Varrock to the end of the free-to-play area. And I think I only saw one or two huge hordes of zombies and one large zombie boss, but even those were dying really quickly. I thought maybe it was because someone gave me a good weapon when I logged in. I was given a Mithril two-hander by someone who had just made one and had one for free. So I thought, oh, maybe this Mithril two-hander is what's making me so powerful. But upon further analysis, it looks as though the game was declared to be too easy on Monday. And that led to a rebalance of sorts. And following that, a change in the way the high scores were accumulated. So I think we'll start right there because you guys both tried this early on, I assume, right?
Yes.
No.
It was Monday and Tuesday.
All right, so Tannis missed out.
Yes, and I'm not happy.
All right, so let's start with you, Taika. What were your initial thoughts on Monday?
So on Monday, I logged in and started everything empty. I had no preset action bar where I had my abilities, and I was given only the most basic, a couple of bronze arrows, a short bow and stuff. And I started exploring. I quickly assembled my stuff and abilities and went a quick tour around the walls of Falador, and okay, I saw a zombie spawn, and I tested my weapon, and the first thought I had was it's not killing it fast enough, but it was quite easy considering being a one versus one fight. The zombie basically didn't have any defense, and I killed it after keeping it at bay from at long distance with my bow. And then I continued, and just as you said, you could continue to walk around the world without any problems, and that actually was quite good since I had to gear up. So it was directly to Alcarid mine and mine those mithril, coal, adamant, everything you can dream of, and make some armor. So right. It was, as you said, it was quite easy. And if you were looking for zombies, your best bet would be just outside the Falador walls, where a huge group of players.
Yeah, that's the sense that I got
doing,
as well.
A lot hard. Of noise at attracting zombies and getting them to come, so you could gather some points. And then I have another story, but that's for Tuesday, 24 hours after release.
All right. So the first day you get in here, I think the sense that most everyone got when they were getting in here was much like yours and myself, where we were trying to put together what we were going to be doing and what our strategy was going to be for this, and gathering weapons, gathering armor and whatnot. I think that when this whole thing started out, I think everyone had the sense that this was going to be perhaps... I'm going to say it was going to be like one of the preparation phases in Left 4 Dead, perhaps, with maybe a little bit of a chance here and there to go test your abilities against random encounters, which I think is a good way of describing it. But I think the thing that we're missing here is the fact that this is not only competitive against the zombies, you're competing against your other players in the world to see who can get the highest high score. Because what is it? I think, it's the top 1,000 that are going to the final competition, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's real prizes on the line.
Yeah, real prizes. We'll get to that in just a little bit after. But, you know, I think that part was there. And I think if we weren't competing for real prizes at the end of the day, I think this might have received perhaps a little bit of better reaction from the community because of the huge changes that were made. So within 24 hours of this coming out, bang, what do we got for changes, Tycho?
So they 24 hours, they put down a countdown timer of 90 minutes, first time seeing those, since you always have to record a session of 1 hour. It was, about time, we all said, about time, because it was too easy. And after the timer went down, we got the following updates. Zombies no longer spawn around Falador. Boss zombies deal less damage on spawn, and hordes will now spawn zombies only. And, I'm reading from the wrong line here.
Oh.
that that was actually the second patch.
Yeah, that was Wednesday.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I'm taking that again. They're addressing a couple of issues. The first one being the game didn't feel threatening at all. Well, you and me, Shane, we experienced that. So they increased the amount of zombies spawning by a lot. So now you will constantly have their presence around you. And you're also less likely to get the base zombies and a higher chance of getting the fast and resistant zombies, meaning that the zombies will be tougher. It won't be those weaklings that you can handle in a couple of seconds. No, it's going to be those that maybe takes a minute, and especially a long minute if there are many.
Yeah, they say you should always feel threatened while in this dimension, and these changes should work to fix that.
And it did.
All right.
Believe me, it did. So, and the second one was, massing bosses is boring and too common, And believe me, if you were...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you were like 50 people taking on a zombie boss that only hurts one player, then it's easy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what they did was when the boss zombie spawns, it will do 5,500 damage to 30 people around it. And when the boss zombie dies, it now infects those around it with 5 stacks of zombieism.
Right. So let's go over quickly here. Yes. What exactly is zombieism for people who haven't tried this?
So zombieism is a poison in the game. You are taking poison damage and you're taking 200 damage per stack. So since we have 5 stacks of zombieism, you are taking 1,000 poison damage. And this can be healed by making antidotes in the game.
And that's quite a lot, considering you only have 9,900 life points.
Yes, it is. But what's worse is the 5,500 damage. Because here's the thing. The boss zombie doesn't give any warnings when it's about to spawn.
No.
And if bosses spawn at the same time, boom, 11,000 of damage and you are insta-dead.
That doesn't make sense that should be doing that. They shouldn't be able to spawn in the same spot.
No, they fixed that later.
Okay, good.
They fixed that later by nerfing it to 2,500. So that helped a lot. And we later, by experimenting a bit, we actually learned a way to counter the 5 stacks of zombieism. And I can tell you now that if you use the escape ability to jump back 7 tiles just as it dies, you won't get it.
Okay, that makes sense. And you know, that's good that there's a way to resist it, because if not, then, I mean, you would just be required to use your antidote.
Yes. So I always have 6 antidotes at all times because of that.
Zombies resistant to certain types of damage, and the fast zombies now hit much harder. Do we know what kind of amplitude we were talking about there as to how much they were amplified?
I actually don't have any numbers, and I don't remember the exact... I didn't feel threatened is what I remembered when zombie came up close and personal, but...
All right. Well, that's not too bad then. As a byproduct of the extra damage received, you'll be the victim of more stacks of zombieism and need more antidote to survive. So,
which isn't super easy to get.
Right.
It's very expensive when it comes to the bottom.
So did the pendulum swing too far on the second day here in terms of making it too hard?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a whole tale. I will take the short version. So I was logged in when the countdown timer started, and then I logged out, and when I came back, have you ever watched a horror movie, Shane?
Yeah, a couple times, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, imagine this. You are in Falador Square, and the very first thing you see are like 10 boss zombies higher than the Falador wall staring at you. If that doesn't make your heart jump, then I don't know what will.
Do we have any pictures of this?
Oh, I should have taken a picture. It was a nightmare. People who just took one step outside their wall were insta-killed.
Yeah.
They could barely get anywhere.
Also,
I
just want to interrupt here. It looks as though you can't use prayer or magic in this dimension.
No.
Exactly.
And the first day, I think it's increased now, but the first day you had 1 minute to get to your grave and you drop everything. You keep nothing, you drop everything, and you had a minute to get there. So that severely limited where you could go, what you could do, because you're going
to
lose your gear.
So we're gravestones circa 2008 now with that.
Yep. I mean, and now I think they've increased it to a minute and a half, but how far can you go?
Yeah, it's still not
a minute
too much.
And a half. Because there ain't no teleports either. Yeah. No teleports, no lodestones, no, you know.
Yeah, but we do have 99 agility, so we do have run energy.
So don't get tired.
We do have run energy that recharges quickly.
You don't get tired.
Yeah, we do.
Of course, Thunder Bomb run after you, but that's okay.
All right, so you said people were getting one hit insta KO'd as soon as they walked out of the wall and whatnot. So how are these huge zombie bosses slayed outside the Falador wall then?
So they added I think this is just speculation, but I noticed a zombie boss despawn when it was out of combat. So it's possible they added a rule that if it just stands around for too long, then it despawns.
All right.
But people were dying a lot. People with full rune complaining in Falador Square. It was like a small World 66 riot that they were complaining. I just died, lost full rune and everything. I'm done. So if there was a point where people got angry, then it was when Jagex turned it from too easy to you won't survive 10 seconds.
Yeah. All right. So that's Tuesday. Now the pendulum swings back a bit on Wednesday, and the game was made a little bit easier. And this is the version that you experienced, Tannis.
Yes.
Okay. So, but Tuesday, see, there's an important caveat on Tuesday, right? So it is much harder, right? On a populated world. If you go to an unpopulated world, there's no zombies. So you at least can go make your equipment. Like, that's the day that I started, and I thought, oh, how am I ever going to score points? There's no zombies. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so, like, and I made, you know, I wish I had spent the whole day making equipment. I didn't, because I thought that's how it was. I didn't know they were going to change everything again. So when they changed on Wednesday, they were the right changes to make. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They were the right changes to make, but it made things in some ways, it made them much more difficult, because now getting equipment, you're going to have to rely on mystery boxes or just hope someone doesn't make it to the gravestone. I mean, that's the only
that's,
way.
That's an interesting really way of putting
get,
it.
That's the only way you're going to really have a chance to get better equipment, because you cannot make it to the Wildy now. Forget Rune. Unless you get in a mystery box, you ain't making it up there. I've tried, and it's rough.
I actually showed a picture to you the pre-talk about me mining rune in wilderness under extreme circumstances.
And was this on Tuesday or Wednesday?
This was actually yesterday, and that would be Wednesday.
All right. I got this picture.
I don't know. Let me just say this. I think you hit the nail on the head, Shane, when you said it would be a different opinion if it wasn't for the prizes.
Yeah,
and I think you're absolutely right, because that is my gripe. That is what I'm mad about.
Right. So let's talk about that right now then.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we started off too easy. We went too hard, and then the pendulum swung back a bit to what I can assume you guys are saying is a happy medium right now. And, you know, based on what I've heard and what I've seen, that would be the conclusion to draw as well. So when you were here Tuesday, Tycho, mining at the rune, let me just have a quick count here of how many zombies there are. But there is a huge lineup here, and let's see, so that's 4x3, so 7, 8, 11, 15, 19, 21, 23, 25, 27, 30, 32, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39. 39 hardened zombies and three larger ones surrounding you at the rune rocks in the wilderness. And this
was yesterday, not Tuesday.
Oh, sorry. Okay, one person.
And I can tell you the reason. Yeah, but this is because these type of zombies doesn't respawn. And if it's something that it's frightening and at the same time I'm proud of, is that the zombies can smell you like from 2 map squares away. They are really good at tracking you down.
Oh.
So while I was standing at the rocks, you suddenly see one zombie in the distance, and another, and then another, and they keep coming. And that's just how a zombie horde is like. They are coming one by one,
that explains
and they are after you.
That explains why you need NXT.
Yes.
Because with NXT, or with the Java client, only one map square is loaded at a time.
Aha, uh-huh, yeah, that NXT, explains a lot.
And with NXT, you know where everyone is, except it's just not shown. So that's why you need NXT for this game mode. So there's the technical reason for it. Sorry, I just had to interrupt because that seemed like a bit of an aha moment. But
yeah, but of course.
So we have all these zombies here on Wednesday, and we finally reached the point of a happy medium. And as you said, Tanis, it all comes down to the prizes at the end of this. And, you know, normally it wouldn't be too much of an issue, but this is for real-world prize. Tycho, you're currently ranked 83 with 14.9 million score. Tanis, you're currently ranked 5194. And me, I am ranked 8474. So the reason behind this is that players are going to go to a finale that's actually going to happen on a weekend.
Yep.
Oh, that's really weird. I just clicked the link to the rules for the finale on the news post, and it went to this week's patch notes. Oh boy. All right. Well, anyways, there's a finale happening on the weekend of the 28th, and the last person to survive that wins a trip to Jagex HQ, among other things. And the people in the top five win things like lifetime membership as well.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of real prizes at stake here. Now, you know, we can say that this happened within the first 48 hours of the event and whatnot. But I think ultimately what we're looking at here is a case where, you know, you can go in and you can get your score up to whatever you, to however many sessions you want, and try and go for the high score to get into the top 1,000 to get into the finale. And if you get into this top finale, you are basically saying that, you know, I'm going to be available that weekend and I'm going to try and play through this. So at the finale, the top 1,000 players get a new title, The Damned. The top 10 players will have their name on a statue in the normal world of RuneScape in-game for 2 weeks. And they will also receive a special Dimension of the Damned style pet in-game. That's not too much for top 10 there, is it?
Not really.
Now, top
it's
five.
It's for fame.
Yeah. Top five, you win an all-expense trip paid to Jagex, Gold Premier Club for 2018, and all the previous rewards. The winner receives 200 million GP, lifetime membership, with the first year being Gold Premier, a unique title, King or Queen of the Damned, a real-life zombie award, as well as all of the previous prizes. So, you know, let's just have a look here at the high scores and see where we're at for top five, because that could shed some light into what's going on with the actual event here and whether or not that's a major issue. So our top player right now, which the game ends in about a week, the time from recording here, is Cyan Bredou with 41.7 million high score. Then Lexa with 28.8. LII244 with 28.5. Duckling with 28. And number five is Androx with 26.8. So, now, these are our top five right now. And do we know if the high scores are going to be reset for the finale?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they?
I don't know about the banks. That's the one thing that I wonder about. Like, yes, are you going to lose all your food? Or are you going to have to get new equipment? Yes. Like, what's... Yes.
Everything will be wiped clean. I mean, the
everything
only
will
reason,
be wiped clean.
Yeah, and I can tell you another thing. This Cyan Bredou, he wasn't number one on the high scores 4 hours ago. So he somehow got 41 million and beat everyone else by 13 million. And this is Thursday. So it's still possible to get with on the first page.
Right.
Just wanted to get that out. But as you said, Tennis, or as to answer you, you will have you banked clean. Nothing will be saved, except there was one thing that would be saved, and that would be, let's see if I can see how game goes.
Or the high scores.
On logging into the finals, you will go back to the basics. All gear you earned in the qualification stage is gone. However, your tool belt items will be upgraded to Mithril level.
Okay.
And at the finale, you will see more zombies, more hordes, and more bosses. And in the finale, you need to fight to stay alive. You will be earning points for your scoreboard every minute you are alive. Only you can only score points for killing zombies. Every 5 minutes, the bottom 70 scores will be called or killed off. So to stay alive, you need to kill and improve your score constantly.
All right, so the sense I get from that is that it's going to be a fresh start in terms of score when you get to the finale, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So in that regard, then, perhaps the pendulum swinging we saw this week isn't too much of a big deal then.
No, well, because this is only to get qualified, to get the top 1,000. Right. And then the finals isn't affected by this.
I disagree. I mean, you're probably gonna hate me for this, Deco. But okay, so you can. Okay, so you know that was a great antidote on how it is still possible to improve your score and get into the qualifier. But my view is, by principle, this is prizes for real money. There should not be. If it's too easy, sorry, it's too easy. Good luck. If it's too hard, sorry, it's too hard. Good luck. You cannot change it back and forth. And if you do, those scores should have been wiped clean. Let it be a free-for-all, whatever. Oops, I screwed up. But don't keep trying to justify your damn mistakes. I don't understand what they haven't learned. It was, what, a month ago? They just screwed up the Dead Man tournament, and now we're doing this.
What happened with Dead Man? Again?
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, well, there was no protection for DOSing. People were getting DOS left and right. There was cheating left and right, and the money still hasn't been awarded, I don't think. So it was a mess.
Okay. For the record, as of recording right now, you need 6,654,920 score to be in the top 1,000.
Yes, that's possible.
Don't die, but yeah, I mean, guess.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but Tannis, would you see whether that they would have, let's say, 48 hours of gameplay where you can't record your score and then release the feature so people can start at equal circumstances?
You know, if it was equal circumstances, that's what I want here. And that's not what is happening. Because, okay, so you can climb up. You can crawl and claw and chop zombies' heads off to get a little bit further. But if you were there on the first day, if you did it in easy mode, all you have to do is just hope someone doesn't pull you down. I mean, it's a huge advantage. No matter how you look at it, it's a huge advantage. Like, you're a little different because you did it on the hard day, which is kind of cool, you know.
Yeah,
props.
I have a whole tale about that.
But, you know, a lot of people didn't, and a lot of those top 1,000, I feel like, probably came from the first day, and there's going to be some sprinkling. And you still have the advantage of you've learned how to play. You have – look at the equipment that you could have gotten on day one and day two.
Yes.
So if you're in Rune and if you're in Green Dragon Hide and you're in all this, you don't have a chance if you're running around in Mithril. And you can't even get Mithril now unless you're getting it in a mystery box anyway, or just, you know, grave robbing, which is actually a pretty viable technique. But
yeah, that's something funny. I want to talk about soon.
Okay.
Continue.
Well, I'm in a spot that it's hard for me because I actually really like the content. I love the idea.
Oh yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Oh, yes.
it's so good. I would love to see this be an actual game mode. I think it would be so fun. But when the minute you offer real prizes, you have to have your crap together. And in perfect JAGX form, nope, they
Yeah,
didn't.
I'm gonna have to agree that, if you are doing this for a real world competition and there is that mark of needing to get into the top 1,000, the content shouldn't have changed when it came out, because, there are the people who did it on the first day. You get that boost, and for everyone else who did it on Tuesday on hard mode day, bless them, like, geez. But subsequent days, when the pendulum has swung back to a more moderate norm, it's gonna be a tough competition, which is probably what Jagex wanted, but at the same time, there should have been a high score wipe after day one, and the contest should have been extended another day.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we can say that to the next time, Jagex, take with you that either you have a 48-hour before you can allow player to climb the high scores, or you wipe the high scores clean.
Yeah. Well, presumably, if this was done again, there wouldn't be the need to reset the high scores, because it would presumably be balanced correctly. So.
Yeah, and like if this was a Halloween event, it would have been perfect. Like it would be cool, but the prize is really just at a whole nother level. Because I was, I didn't hear about it late, and I had some prior commitments on Monday, so I couldn't start till Tuesday. But I was excited. I'm like, I am going to compete. There's something that I can actually be competitive in, and I was excited. And then it just felt crushed. Because, and here's the other strange thing that I think is kind of a little wonky with this. So the boss monsters you get like 250 bottle caps for, but you have to be on a world where there's a lot of action going on, so a lot of players, a lot of killing to spawn these boss monsters
Yes.
so that you can get those 250 bottle caps, right? So that
Yes.
means that there's this weird competitive, yet you have to be
Yep.
cooperative. So I feel
Yeah.
like I'm stuck in a group project, and I hate it. Like
Because
I hate
exactly.
that.
Because you need to compete against the other players for score, but you also need to be collaborative in terms of
Exactly.
ensuring that everyone works.
That's what's so unique, because it's not a death match where it's one versus one, and it's not either the castle wars that everybody's in the same boat, and if you fall, everybody falls. No, it's that it's they're in between, that you are competing, but at the same time you are cooperating.
But once again, because of the real world prizes, that changes things. Because if you were to be, say you are a very capable PVM clan, and you go out and you are working together, you're gonna be better than everyone else. And it goes right back to the Dead Man tournament. That's what happened there. A clan comes in, knocks everybody, I mean, and runs interference for everybody. It's totally cheating. And you could do the same thing here. Like, you
Yes,
could do the same thing here.
I actually saved that for later, but yes, that's exactly what I'm worried about the finals, because the player interaction has a huge impact, and I believe that's actually the key to win the final because of two reasons. Number one is the ability to handle zombies. More zombies will spawn, more zombies means more score if you kill them, and teamwork can bring the zombies down. And the second one was what you were talking about later, that you had to assemble gear. And if everybody in their team gets loot boxes and then gets gear that they don't want, they can just trade them with each other. Or they can even feed one player that they really, that's the
There you go.
leader,
You hit the nail on
that
the
they know
head.
it's the best, and feed that player as much as you can. Now, luckily, you can't trade shrimps, that's food, but you can still provide protection and armor and even ammunition.
You know what they need to do for the finale? If they want the finale to be carried out the way it should be without this kind of interference that you're talking about from groups of players, because, you know, there is no clan system in Dimension of the Den, but still you can have friends chats and you can still group together,
Discord.
Right? Discord, exactly. What they needed to do is this needed to be treated like a true esports event, have everyone in the same venue and cut them off from communication with everyone else. That would have been the way to do it. I just want to draw everyone's attention back to the Dimension of the Dam trailer that we saw at RuneFest. I'm going to play this again because I just want to provide a level of the immersion that Jagex was going for with this. Listeners will hear it, and that's all you need. It's a minute long. This is what you guys saw at RuneFest Live, so.
Yeah, I sat there on the front seat.
This October. Photos of Draenor, Falador, White Knights, the dead. We actually see dead people on RuneScape here, which is something we haven't seen before. All over the place. The dead will rise. Dimension of the Damned. So, as you can see here with this, Jagex really put a lot of effort into making this be a different kind of RuneScape. And
they did.
And they did deliver on that. But at the same time, they wanted it to be competitive in almost an esports sense. But I have a feeling that that is the part that they have kind of fallen down on here. So. Yeah,
exactly.
They also have a video here, 1 minute 17, How to Win RuneScape's Dimension of the Damned. Let's see what this says. How to Win Dimension of the Damned.
Hopefully, by now, you know the basics of how to play Dimension of the Damned. But how do you win, you might ask? There are several tiers of prizes available in this game mode, some for simply taking part, and some for the more hardcore and involved players out there. To earn prizes, you need to complete hour-long scoring sessions. You can complete as many of these as you want. You begin each session with a points multiplier, which decreases every time you die. And how do you rack up points? Well, you kill a ton of zombies, of course. Your score only counts for yourself, so regardless if you're in a group of players or playing it solo, your score will be the same. Your best session will be registered in a high scores table, where the top 1,000 players will earn the right to take part in the Dimension of the Damned Grand Finale on Saturday, October 28th, and have a chance to win some awesome prizes, including lifetime membership, limited edition collectibles, and all expenses paid trips to Jagex Studios. The competition will be fierce, so don't hold back. Dimension of the Damned is a free-to-play game mode, so you can log in right now to find out if you are a good enough zombie killer to top the leaderboard. Have fun, and happy scaping.
So the sense I got from that is that there was a focus on multiplier, and your best session is the one that's tracked on the high scores.
Yeah.
So we were wondering
the
how
multiplier,
that
multiplier. We forgot to mention that.
Yeah,
because
that could be how that
you die.
Yeah, so that could be how that guy just shot up to the top of the high scores, right? Multiplier.
Yeah, that
maybe.
Would be my guess. But it almost feels to me like it's a pre. It's almost kind of like a prerequisite if you want to be competitive at all. If you die, you're done.
Yeah.
Might as well restart your session.
Yeah.
Yes.
Makes sense.
So can I bring another side topic, or
please.
You want to finish this one?
Well, I mean, I think we've done all we need to do on the fact that, you know, it was the pendulum swung and then it swung back, and that would have been fine in a normal game mode, but the fact there's competitive prizes up for it, something different should have been done with that. So, I mean, unless there's anything on that, you can move right ahead, Tycho.
Okay, because one thing I want to bring up is the player interaction. For those of you who have played, you must have noticed by now there is no GE. And there are things that aren't tradable, such as shrimps and antidotes and other things. But what is tradable is the armor and weapons. And how do you trade something that you don't want? Well, just by standing in Falador Square and shouting, just like old school selling, or buying and selling.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a nice touch.
And I have to tell you, I actually went from having nothing to full Tier 50 gear, that's the highest you can get, just by standing in Falador Square, picking up the drops that players didn't want from the loot boxes, and then selling them. And I got everything I wanted. So that's my secret to
how you
get gear.
Well, there's another method right there.
Now, people maybe think, well, there's not a lot of people playing now as it did before. But my counter to that is, well, people now are more geared up than before. So they are dropping more. Yeah. Stay around in the shop in Falador if you got absolutely nothing and don't want to kill zombies or just go out and get some ore. Then just stay around and you will get a ton of free stuff. And you know what? Bottle corks, that's the currency to buy in the shop, it's not tradable. So how do people trade? What's the currency? I want you both to guess what the currency is, the non-official currency between players.
Well, I figured it was just a straight-up bartering system. Like, you got a coif? Okay, I need a Vambrance.
Bronze arrows?
It's actually arrows.
That's what I thought.
Yes, exactly. Because it's just, as Tanis says, that if two people can something I want, I have something you want, then it's just trade and it's done. But there still needs to be a currency for if something is more valuable than the other, and that's where arrows comes in. You can always trade rune armor and blue dehide for rune arrows. Why? Well, to make this long, 1 hour long sessions, the rangers need to have the highest damage output as possible. How do you get that? Rune arrows and adamant if that's available. So that's their non-official currency. And I also have to, before I go on, I will continue this. So that's the thing. I traded my way up and got everything I wanted, but that won't work in the finals because they will be killing off the 70 players that's lowest and the high scores. Therefore, if I just stay around in the Falador Square and trying to trade with people, I will be killed off instantly.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is also part of the reason why it's not too big of an issue, but we already talked about that.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And another thing I noticed is that there are no living or barely any living NPCs in the game.
Yep.
And that put a huge restriction when I realized that there were no dragons I could kill for dragon.
Yeah,
dragon hide.
Really hard for rangers.
Yes, really hard for rangers. The only thing that rangers can get from mining is arrowheads. But the melee community, they have a huge advantage. They can make armor.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but you, after Wednesday, it's really hard to get to anywhere where you're going to be able to do that armor. Exactly. The thing that the rangers have, I think, kind of balances, because you only have to tag a monster to get the credit.
Eventually. There you go.
So that does help a lot. A boss monster.
I also found it really hard to get to supply crates before they disappeared or were taken.
I've never seen one before. So
I actually rushed my way to supply drops and never saw one. And in the end, I came up with a theory that they despawn after a number of players get to them. It's not written anywhere, and I haven't found any information that supports this, but I don't have any other explanation. The only way when I actually got to a supply drop is when I was at the Runit Ores, and it just happened to drop two map squares away from me. Then it looks like a normal crate, like any crate you have ever seen, and you just loot it, and you get a lot of food. I got a lot of food and antidotes and other stuff, but it was so strange because it was so obvious. I should have seen it if I raised it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else before we talk about some of the finale rules regarding Dimension of the Damned? Because I mean, I think we got the core of it here. That, you know, it's a really innovative game mode. It looks really good. It's something that can be very fun. It just had a few balance issues along the way that kind of threw a couple of wrenches in it. And if not for those balance issues, we would have had a great experience for this.
It's just that I don't agree with what they said on the front page, where you can make your armor from scratch. That's, I mean, what do they mean with make your armor from scratch? Well, making it with your two own hands, take the leather and take you to Atano, but it's very restricted. So I just picked up what other people dropped and traded my way up, player interaction all the way, and I think they assumed
people would be out there and they would be, you know, mining and whatnot in order to get their top gear. But like you guys said, that's not entirely viable here. So
yeah, so I actually have to say that this event puts more, how do you say, more focus that if there are players out there who are going for the finals together, then they won't drop stuff. They will ask their friends, their teammates, if they want the stuff. And that would be a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. So in that case, moving on to the finale, if you are in the top 1,000 players, once the event has concluded, you will receive an in-game mailbox invitation through the Jagex Mail Center, as well as an email confirming your entry. Then, on the 28th of October, the final begins at 1800 game time. The servers will be open from 1730 game time, and you will be locked inside Falador until it begins. If you have not logged in by 1800 hours, you will be not able to log in and will miss out on the competition. You'll still receive Year of the Damned title, though. If you die while the finale is ongoing, your run is over and you won't be able to rejoin the game mode. Similarly, if you log out, you are counted as dead and you will not be able to rejoin. So you better have a good internet connection that day.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. That last point right there, it's what's making me nervous.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, just yesterday, I had a client crash due to something on my system here, and it was nothing I could have foreseen. So you're going to have those kind of issues as well here.
Yeah, and you could even have more nefarious things as well.
Yeah, well, the trick with that is to just not give your IP address out to anyone, and hope your ISP will be have enough bandwidth to prevent something stupid like that from happening.
Yeah.
I don't even know how someone on an internet connection could get DDoSed unless they, you know, broadcasted their IP address somewhere. But anyways, so every 5 minutes, as we talked about, the bottom 70 in this event will be killed off. And to stay alive, you need to kill and improve your score constantly. The culling only kills to bring down the player count to a set number. So, for example, if the culling is due to kill 70 players but 15 die due to other sources, then the culling will only kill 55. You'll be told through your interface if you're due to be culled. When you gather your gear, killing zombies to keep up your score and keeping yourself alive, you'll also contend with the miasma, a brutal corruption of air which can kill you if you stand too long inside of it. The miasma will be closing in, forcing every finale player to gather in a predetermined area through the competition. So basically the universe is going to shrink here. And you know, I really hope that based on what we've seen here that this has been thoroughly tested, because anytime you're killing off players via in-game system, you kind of want to make sure that you're killing off the right people. So I hope that's been tested.
What makes me more nervous is now that the, how do you say it? Miasma?
Yeah, miasma.
Yeah, miasma. That it being in the finale you can't scale in the wilderness. It's too far off, yep. And it's quite possibly that scaling locations will be targeted. And yeah, so the only way I see to actually get armor and supplies is either through loot boxes, and again, people who drops it.
That's going to be hard to find.
Getting it yourself by killing zombies. Yeah. So that's the two options.
All right. Sounds like Pulp RS, right?
Yeah. There you go. Nice reference right there. The reference, of course, to PUBG, the pickup simulator. So before we move on to other RS news this week, I'm going to ask you guys two things. First and foremost, do you guys think that this will be a success and it will be repeated?
I hope so. And I think it is a success in its own right now. The competitive part of it is what needs worked out. And you know what? Maybe, just maybe, Jagex needs more than just one balance person. Like, they still only have Timbo, right? It's like he's the only balancer.
Well, I know Timbo is the head game balancer, but I'm not sure. I would think there would be others. Like,
you would hope.
Yeah.
But I've never heard any reference to anyone else. So like I've always kind of wondered.
All right.
But I hope they feel that it's successful.
Yeah, because definitely.
I think it's really fun, and it could be a standalone mode that would be a change and something to do different.
And you know, you don't even need to have it out all around. This goes to what I was talking about with community events. You could have a thing where, rather than being so drawn out like this, it is condensed down to maybe 15, 25, 30 minutes. And you get to go to a specific NPC in the surface world, and you talk to this NPC, and you know they run this for say 2 weeks at a time, and you do this and you get some unique rewards from it. It's kind of like a seasonal event, and you talk to this NPC, and you and everyone else throughout all the RS worlds who are going there, you get transported into this other world. You spend 15, 20, 25 minutes doing it, and you get something at the end of that. And then at the end of 2 weeks after you do this, you get something, a bigger event. So basically what I'm saying is that it doesn't necessarily need to be its own event in the sense of esports if they didn't want it to. They could have took the same methodology of having a different game mode and just bringing normal players into it and letting them play, you know, every day for 20 minutes or so, do that for a week and then get a bigger reward. Like, this would be a perfect way to revitalize a mini game and just have various different game modes like this come around at different times of the years. I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, I really think that this is a success. I mean, when I logged in, and I totally agree with NXT making this look great. I mean, I gathered my stuff, and as I said before, I took a round before the Falador Wars, and after that, I went exploring the wilderness, the Tavoli, the Al-Karid, everywhere. And I have to really give Jagex an applaud for the game world. I mean, everywhere you go, dead bodies, barricades, there's houses almost burning. Well, not everywhere, but there's fires everywhere. There's total chaos, and there's the filter that really sets the mood. So this is a success. This is a more than success, and something I actually want to come in the next year, maybe with a twist, maybe some tweaks and new objectives, but I actually want to see this in October next year.
Well, and that kind of goes with what my final little 2 points here. And before I say this, I understand there are two sides to this, and they had reasons for why they chose what they chose. I probably would have expanded this into members' content areas. I think that would have been cool, make it a little bit bigger. Two, Shane, you'd probably could speak to this a lot better than I could, but it seems like this would have taken some development time and money, and why for just 10 days? Like, it's too good for it to only be 10 days.
Yeah. I mean, development wise, you know, that I think that kind of going based on actually your first question answering the second one, you know, expand into members areas. I think the fact that if you look at the user interface, there's so many parts of the UI that are disabled, you know, the adventurous UI, the customization UI, magic, prayer, all of these things that are disabled are disabled because what we're effectively seeing is a lockdown limited game mode. And if we were to go into the members areas, you would have to spend more time in doing that. So, you know, I think
well, that makes sense.
So I think what we're seeing here is that, you know, we would like it to be more like you said, but at the same time, I think what we ultimately got is limited because they wanted to be able to produce it and get it out in a reasonable amount of time without needing to recreate the game world. Because if you look at this and count on your fingers, how many unique NPCs do we have in here? How many unique?
Oh, not too many.
Exactly, like, right?
Maybe five.
I mean, we got five different zombies, and then they just took a couple of god NPCs and put them outside Varrok, Falador, Remington, and other locations, but that's already made NPCs. So they basically only made five unique NPCs and then dropped a lot of dead bodies everywhere.
Yeah, and that's my point, is that, you know, while it seems as though this would be a high-cost project to do, the fact there's so little NPCs and so many restrictions just put on the client, that kind of oh, that's interesting. There's just a 15-year lantern on one of the trees in the area here. I don't know if you guys noticed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but another thing, say, don't you think that there's simplicity that you – there is no complex choices. It's just sticks and stones. You either take a sword and a bow and kill things. Don't you think it's the simplicity that makes it so fun?
Exactly. And
yeah,
I think it is.
Like I said, there's reasons. Like, I understand, like, why. And actually what Shane said, I never even thought of. But that's probably the main reason, right? I thought it might have been to further get you know, free-to-play people involved, especially with all the new updates that they just
did. And you know, that's another thing we completely overlooked, that this is free-to-play and the free-to-play can take part in this. But what I was going to say with this is that, you know, you end up with something that is so simple that I can see something like this starting off as someone's lunchtime project.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
I actually had a similar idea for 2 years that involved a player-owned house and a zombie horde. So I can see – I agree with you, Shane.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably be seeing more of this in the future. And I think what we can all say is that this is a success, bar the balancing issues that we had, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I just have to say that this has been good for me because I was very angry, and I'm real calm now. I feel a lot better. We've talked through it. I feel like we've grown here today.
Yeah, and see that's the effect we want to have on people.
Right?
That's the effect we want to have on people, because it takes a lot of effort to come to this, because I before this, I didn't know who I was going to have on the show. I was going to go for someone from Clan Quest in addition to Tycho, but Tanis, you messaged me and said you were doing this and you had thoughts on that. So I thought, excellent. And
it's good to have you here, Tanis.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, yeah, I think that might have been the first time I've ever been like, hey, really, I got something. but I felt really passionate. Like, I was so excited. I wanted to compete.
And lots of the players do. And it's just a matter of not being able to flesh out these thoughts in a community on the internet that leads to the most of the hate that we see.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I mean, the fact that we're coming out of this and we are calling it a success, given the balance issues that we had on days one and two, is a testament to the game mode and what we're able to make from it. And as we saw, it all comes down to multipliers. So whoever is in first place now will not be in first place when this finishes.
Exactly. So I'm actually right now preparing the tactics for the finale.
There we go. And what I would say to everyone else who is listening to this, if you have heard these balance issues and you know you feel you don't have a chance because of what was there, I would say give this game mode a chance. It's entirely possible that with a little bit of preparation, talking about what we have done here, you will be able to ultimately uncover the best way to go forward and win at Dimension of the Damned. And I think, Tycho, you covered quite well what the best way to do this is.
Yeah, and I've spent 2 days before each timed session that I've done just preparing with food and antidotes and getting as prepared as I could.
Yeah.
So you will have prep time. You know, you will have prep time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as a little more push, a morale booster for you out there, the number one at the current high school, Cyan Brodo, he wasn't number one in the high school 5 hours ago. And that's saying something. 5 hours ago, and between 5 hours ago and now, he somehow got 41 million in score. And that he beat the number one with 13 million points. That's a lot. 13 million is actually how much points I got during my first session. He basically beat the number one with that.
There's still lots to figure out, and I think it's got to come down to that multiplier.
Yes, don't die.
Yeah,
don't die.
All right. Well, that's Dimension of the Damned. I think we covered pretty much everything we need to there. Any last-minute tips for anyone out there, you guys?
Let's see. Do I want to give away all my secrets?
After the show.
Yeah, okay. But I will just give them a small rundown. Scavenge things, gather everything around you, and be smart. Oh, and finally, put some real time into your action ball. Put some real time into it, because that determines your damage, and that is the number one thing that will affect your score.
I even considered going full manual for this, so that's... it's a big thing for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All righty then.
The tips.
You guys ready for some patch notes?
Yeah.
And that's a note
back
that
to the living.
Back to the living. And if that's a note out there, I guess we won't be able to do it next week because it'll be out. But I guess people could have asked this week for tips from the Greek Tycho and Tanis, but hey. All right, so patch note-wise this week, a relatively slim week compared to weeks in the past. Starting off here, players carrying only one defender in their backpacks will no longer have their Warriors Guild progress with Kamfrina reset. Oh boy, you definitely would not want that to happen if you were hunting defenders.
Ooh, yes.
Anti-fire, weapon poison, and aggression potions and wilder pies will no longer stay active on free worlds. Good, because those can be pretty overpowered.
Yes.
Now, here's Jagex giving the players some rope to hang themselves with. Players can now define their maximum foreground and background FPS in the NXT client via the graphic setting interface. So, you can totally imagine a good way to troll people here by setting their max FPS down to a very low number. I don't know.
I don't even understand why you would want it different and all that. Can you help us?
Yeah. Shane? You know, you have a setting normally in games called VSync, and what VSync does is it locks the game refresh rate to the refresh rate of your monitor. And the reason you use VSync is because sometimes you can draw stuff faster than your monitor can display it, and that's where you get the visual tearing effects on your screen that kind of look like a distortion.
Mm-hmm.
So VSync is one way of doing it, but you might not necessarily need the synchronization of your video card to your monitor's refresh rate to prevent that if you're not having those issues. So what FPS capping does is it lets you get the benefit of capping your frames without locking the frame rate to your monitors. Now, the question is, why do you want to cap your frame rate? Well, chances are, if you have a modern computer, you can run RuneScape NXT at over 100 FPS. But your monitor is only using 60 of those frames per second. So that means that those extra 45, 50 FPS are being just used and generated, and your graphics card is doing extra work for no reason. And when it's doing extra work for no reason, it is effectively using more of its power than it needs to. And that can cause the fan to kick up, for example. So if you want to play RuneScape in silent, but your graphics card is rendering at 120 FPS, but you don't need that much, your fan might be going. If you cap your FPS down to 70, your graphics card won't render beyond that, and it will run a lot cooler. So that is the point of FPS capping, so that you don't go beyond, say, 70 FPS. Now, in regards to background FPS, let's say you minimize RuneScape or you bring up your web browser in front of it, right? Well, you don't need RuneScape to be running at 65 FPS when you're checking on a web browser, because if you do that, I mean, once again, you're just wasting computer power, right? So there's no reason.
Is background when it's in the background, like when you're doing something else.
Right, or if you minimize it. It'll take it down to 30 FPS, It won't use as many system resources.
I had a whole different idea of this. I thought it was like stuff in the background, like way far away in the draw distance. So
no.
Okay, this makes sense. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see this in a lot of grade A games do this because, you know, they are a lot more intensive than RuneScape. And I mean, if you're alt-tabbed, and chances are if you're alt-tabbed, you're wanting to look something up, there's no reason for the game to be running and consuming your power, right? So this is something that Grade 8 games have done for a while. So.
Well, yeah. I didn't even know about that setting, so thank you. I'm going to
They just added it this week, and previously it was capped to a max of plus 10 over your monitor's refresh rate, so 70 in most cases, and it was capped to 30 FPS if it was in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, most people want to keep the car engine in the garage, not in front of your desk.
There you go. All right, and then here's one that made my head scratch and made Sirion's head scratch. The cache churn of NXT has been reduced. We were both looking at this and we said, what is cache churn? Because, I mean, we have worked with programming and whatnot before, both of us quite extensively. And he's actually worked with game engines and he has never heard the term cache churn before. So I actually did some Googling on this, and it turns out that cache churn is just a fancy way of saying we're swapping things in and out of the cache of the game client. So,
did they go with cache
churn? I don't know.
Joke about it?
No, it's just an internal thing that is a language beyond most would know. But I appreciate the level of detail. The high frequency noise visible on newer and normal map models when viewed up close has been reduced. I've never noticed that. I've never looked at anything that close before. But basically what this is basically any kind of little artifacting that you might see if you look at a model really close and you can see the game engine trying to render it, resulting in high frequency noise. Mm-hmm. The RAM usage in the shader system has been reduced by around 20 megabytes. So once again, optimizing NXT. Now onto some free-to-play changes here.
Oh, yes. Before that, this is an example of NXT getting better and better. I mean, how long has NXT been out now?
April 2016.
Oh, you know that. Well, it's been over 1.5 years now, and it's still getting better. So, and I still getting people to, I'm talking to people a lot at the GE and also in Clan Quest, and they haven't tried NXT in a long time. So when we are all suggesting to that they have to use it, they all get too surprised that it actually works with the kind of computers they have.
Oh yeah, I mean that's once again, it's a testament of the RS community that if, you know, a wide version of the community says something isn't good, the rest of the community won't use it even if they haven't tried it. So this is once again a call to everyone out there listening who might not have used NXT in the past. Now is the time to give it a try.
I mean, test it. If it doesn't work, if you prefer the browser, just uninstall it. And you know that right now it's not the right time. But if it works, it will show you RuneScape in a whole new way.
Yep. Yep. All right. The artifact at the Edgeville Wilderness Wall that teleports to the King Black Dragon Lair can now be activated on Free Worlds. A bit of a follow-up from our free update last week, so that's good.
And very important, because if you go through that route, the dangerous wilderness route, you will get a 10% damage boost.
Which could be very useful.
So. Yeah.
Updated models have been added for the Carapace, Spider, Wizard, and Black Wizard shields, as well as Black Wizard gloves and boots. All right. Interesting that's there this week, but once again, focus on lower level content. Baby Dragon Bones are now non-members object. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yew trees are correctly marked as non-members in the woodcutting skill guide. Logging into a free world inside the Mage Trading Arena will teleport players outside of it. And the loom in the Falador Cabbage Patch can now be used on free world, so something that was forgotten with the free pass. And everyone's favorite Blurite ore can now be smelted into Blurite bars on free worlds. So, a nice little batch of NXT and free-to-play updates once again this week, rounding out that free-to-play experience. So, anything else from the patch notes?
Free-to-play love.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else from the patch notes before we move on?
I don't remember there being a loom in the Falador Cabbage Patch.
Oh, in the Cabbage Patch farm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Must have missed that.
All right, so you were at RuneFest, Tycho, and you saw
a lot of things.
Yeah, you saw a lot of things, including RS Mobile, and these were some of the mock-ups they had at RS Mobile, and they finally shared these with us. So what we're looking at for a potential RuneScape user interface is first here, let's just look at the combat mode one. So on the left-hand side, you're going to have a parent button, which is locked in combat. It displays an in-combat icon. It'll show tasks and other notifications. To the right of that, you'll have target info when you're attacking someone. You also have a notification area next to that. And then in the top right-hand side, you'll have the mini-map as we know it with the compass. And then a child ribbon, which can be tapped or dragged out to show various other items. And the size adapts to compass and combat mode. It's also scrollable, so you'll swipe it to scroll. And this is where you'll access things like your backpack, your quest interface, your worn items, and whatnot. Then at the bottom, you have the action bar, which is your revolution ability bar. Shows everything that we've come to expect of the action bar. And then on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, you have action buttons, which are customizable, and you can drag and drop items to them. And they'll be hidden if they're empty. So examples of this is that you would be able to drop your combat abilities to it, for example, or drop things from the child ribbon like your backpack or your worn items interface. And the idea I get from this is that you'll be able to access these two buttons on the side with your thumbs. So I like the way this is shaping up. There's another mock-up here with it fully expanded out. With the chat box and the inventory and whatnot. It looks workable. My only complaint with this is that it looks and feels really cramped. So we're going to have to wait and see exactly how this pans out once we get our hands on it. But, you know, overall, I'm pretty pleased with what we got here. And this is kind of the way I had imagined how it would work. So you guys have any thoughts on these UIs? UI mockups.
Did you get to try it, Tycho, when you were at RuneFest?
Sadly, I was too busy going around as a 350-year-old gnome and getting a Hasselmere's signet ring from Mod Timbo, and it's a true story actually, and a lot of other things. So in the end, I only passed by where RS on Mobile was, just beside the charity cooperatives and other things. So sadly, I never tested it out, and it's something I gotta do next year. Be more casual. Don't go around and say a lot of Hasselmere quotes.
Well, I was. I'm way more hopeful than when I first heard about this. I just wasn't too sure. And now the only concern I have is, how's it going to be for people with like big old fingers?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm very hopeful. I mean, it's looking really good, but I do wonder if I'm going to be hitting two or three things, when I'm trying to.
Well, it doesn't look like buttons. It because there's a significant amount of touch space between the custom items. I think what will remain to be seen is how you interact with things like the bank and whatnot. And that's what people said who tried it at RuneFest. Sirion gave us a good review on the RuneFest episode of it. He said it was fluid, it worked, it felt like RuneScape, it was playable, but the UI needed to work. And that's obviously what they're working on right now. And, this is the whole reason I bought the 8 Plus rather than just the 8 when the new iPhones came around, is because I wanted something that was going to be large enough for a RuneScape mobile experience. So,
did they sponsor you?
No, they did not, unfortunately.
Oh.
I wish.
Yeah, should have done that. The only thing I'm thinking about is how do I write to other people? That's one thing. And the other one is how well I can remove things I don't want. For example, we now see I have the backpack just to my right. And then my first question I'm having in my head is, can I remove that? How can I move around the minimap? Can I also do that? How much is this customizable?
I don't think it will be that customizable on mobile in terms of being able to move stuff around like the minimap. But when it comes to
ToggleScape?
No, hopefully
yes,
not.
Because
they got to pare it down for this. The minimap, you will tap to move and pinch to zoom and two fingers to rotate it.
Have you actually ever needed to zoom in on the minimap?
Yeah, a couple times actually.
What? I never used it. I mean, I know it's there. And
have
I
used that during quests
to
see where NPCs are?
I do often.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then it's just me then.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm very, very excited about this. And as I said, that was the whole reason for getting a very large phone this time around. So,
I should follow your example.
Yeah, you
getting
should.
A new phone. Mine is from the Stone Age.
Yeah.
We should always follow Shane's example.
Yep. He's iPhone 8,
trying
right?
To help us. He's trying to help us here.
Yeah, trying.
And Tannis, iPhone, iOS, great for accessibility.
It is. It really, really is.
So much do they pay you to keep mentioning them?
A little product placement. That ain't ever hurt nobody.
All right. So our final RS piece of news this week is the next batch of drop announcements from Mod Timbo, and these include the Legio's God Wars Dungeon 2 and Nex. So starting off here, we'll start with the Legions from the Order of Ascension dungeon. There is a 1 out of 50 chance to get an Ascension Signet from each of the Legio's. You guys ready for this one? 1 out of 2,056 chance at Ascension Grips can only be dropped on a Slayer task. 1 out of 2,056.
Why aren't those worth more than what they
I don't know. I have no idea.
Wow.
Speechless.
1 out of 64 chance at Ascension Keystones from any Ascension creature except Skitarius, where it's a 1 out of 50 chance. There's also an equal chance for each Keystone regardless of type. So 1 out of 64. That's why there's such good money there. But yeah, I had no idea the grips were so rare.
Yeah, geez. That seems a little too rare. I mean, if a signet is 1 in 50, so that means you would have, like, how many signets does it take? 6?
Yeah, all 6.
There are 6 bosses.
Yep.
Okay, so you have to kill considerably less things to get an ascension crossbow than you would the gloves to hold it.
Yeah. Let me just crunch some quick numbers here for you, Tanis. So you have a 0.98 chance of not getting it for each drop. So if you kill... If you kill 100 of the Legios, you have a 13% chance of not getting the signet drop from those, give or take. And you would need to do that 6 times. So you would be looking probably somewhere between 300 to 500 kills to get all 6, depending.
And then, so in the grips would be like 1, it's 1 and 2,000.
Yeah, so 1 out of 2056 going with that, and you were killing, let's say you just killed 500 of those for the heck of it, you would have a 78% chance of not getting it at 500 kills.
78% wow. chance, and you have wow. to be on the Slayer task.
Yeah. Wow. Kill 1,000, 61%. Take it up to 2,000, 37%. So you're looking at, you know, if you want to have pretty much, yeah.
That just really doesn't make sense to me. But
you'd have to kill about 4,000 of them to be pretty much almost guaranteed a drop between 3,000 and 4,000.
Wow. I'm speechless.
Yep.
I know, for ascension grips. I mean, like...
And they degrade to dust.
Oh. Yeah.
You can't repair them.
I forgot about that.
That's pretty funny. Part. All right, moving on to... Moving on to God Wars Dungeon 2, then. Mod Timbo calls this one a little bit complicated because all 4 God Wars Dungeon 2 bosses share the same drop rate for rare items, and that drop rate is affected by either reputation, challenge mode, or wearing the Ring of Fortune or Luck of the Dwarves equally. There's 2 random numbers created for rare items in the God Wars Dungeon. There is the roll for uniques, which we'll call the unique roll, and a roll for the different bosses, which we'll call the essence roll. So the base chance of each roll is... 1 out of 512 chance for a particular unique item from a boss. So anima core, armor, or weapons along that path. 1 out of 128 chance for boss essence. So now with reputation, there's the 25, 50, and 75%. And 100% upgrades, depending on your reputation within that faction. It's worth noting, though, although obvious, that having 100% drop chance increases on hell, 100% drop chance increase on Hellware doesn't impact any other boss. So what happens is that we change both the unique roll and essence roll depending on what your reputation is to the below values. And this is where reputation unlock equals unique roll and essence roll. So at the 0% bonus, you have 512 and 128 mentioned above. 25% bonus, that goes up to 448 and 112. 50%, 384 and 96. 320 and 80 for 75%. And for the final 100% bonus, 256 and 64. So as you guys are seeing here with the 100% bonus, your chances of getting things are actually pretty decent here.
Yeah, very decent and doubled. So always go for the 100% and you will make some GP.
Yeah, right on. Now when it comes to challenge mode, this gives you a better chance at both the unique role and the essence role after reputation bonuses have been applied. What happens here is that they take the reputation again and further scale with challenge mode, giving it a slight buff. And here are all the calculations. So, for example, if you had a 50% drop increase and then your loot bonus would be 50. That's the way they're saying this here. So at 0%, it would be 512 multiplied by this is a really big formula here.
I want to hear you say this.
All right. So this is going to be 512 multiplied by loot bonus divided by 5. Subtract that from 90 divided by 100. So
divide by 100 first.
Divide by 100 first. Is it? No. Oh, it's all divided by 100.
I'm so lost.
Yeah.
I'm so lost.
See, I honestly wish we had some nice pictographs here. So,
we need some charts.
You were right from the beginning, Shane.
Hmm? What was that?
No, you were right from the beginning.
Yeah, I was right from the beginning.
Bonus divided by 5, 90 minus the result of that.
Yep.
And then divide it by 100, multiply it by 512.
Right. And each of these loot bonuses increases throughout challenge mode. So it increases at the various different bonuses. So at 0, what we're subtracting is, of course, 0. 25%, we're subtracting 5. At 50, we're subtracting 10. 75, 15. 100 minus 20. So this gives us a final modifier number of 460, 380, 307, 240, and finally for 100% bonus, 1 out of 179 for the unique roll, which comes down from 1 out of 256. Essence rolls now are going to be 1 out of 115, 1 out of 90, 1 out of 76, 1 out of 60, and 1 out of 44. So as you can see, challenge mode plays a huge impact here in regards to the amount of loot that you're going to get from this. So just to recap here, the loot bonus is the extra percent buff that you have from reputation. So if you have a 50% drop increase, then your loot bonus would be 50. So it all depends based on what that is from your challenge mode.
Challenge mode is so hard, though. Have you ever tried that, Shane?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
it's hard.
It's rough.
All right.
I actually only tried the Vindicta and the Furies. I haven't dared to try Hellwur and Gregorovic.
Oh, Hellwur is the fun one. That's the one right there.
I'm getting the shivers.
And then finally, you're wondering how luck integrates with this. If you're wearing Ring of Fortune or Luck of the Dwarves, a further 1% is taken off the numbers after all the bonuses have been applied. Here's what this means for different reputation thresholds on and off challenge mode. We'll just talk about normal mode here with this. So this takes us down for the unique rolls on non-challenge mode to 1 over 506, 1 over 443, 1 out of 380, 1 out of 316, and then finally at 1 out of 100 bonus, 1 out of 253. So it's a little bit, it's not too much in terms of the ring. So you can kind of see here how the ring works.
But you still get a chance to get from the rare loot table.
True. You know? And
that
I think,
chance of Hasselmer's signature.
Right. And that's why you want to be doing that. Further, for the essence roll, that takes you to 1 out of 126, 1 out of 110, 1 out of 95, 1 out of 79, and 1 out of 63. So as you can see here, makes a moderate difference, but like Tycho said, you want it for the Hasselmer signet ring and the chance of getting on the unique drop table. So,
yes.
Nope. And finally, summing this up, this means that the best chance at unique items in God Wars Dungeon 2 is by having maxed out reputation, bonus for drop chances in challenge mode, and wearing a tier 3 luck ring or higher, which gives you 1 out of 177 or 1 out of 4 T3. So there we go. Who knew God Wars Dungeon 2 was so complex in terms of its luck chances? Yeah.
No, shall we blame him all to take?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. All right, on to next. So 1 out of 50 chance for of getting an ancient emblem if you have an appropriate defender. So, of course, that's to get the next defender. 1 out of 128 for the Torva, Pernix, Virta, Zarite bow, Torva, Pernix, armor sets, gloves, boots, helmet, you name it. So 1 out of 128 for practically everything from Nex. And he says, just for fun here, chances of getting Ceridoman Bruise and Super Restores from Nex. These are two separate rolls. 7 out of 128 chance for a 4 dose Super Restores, and 10 4 dose Ceridoman Bruise, and 29 over 128 chance for 30 4 dose Ceridoman Bruise, and 10 4 dose Super Restores.
And mind that those aren't noted. So,
yeah, that's obviously.
Well, you always need to bring a notepaper with you.
Yeah, or just be there with a good group of a couple people and you can get through them, right?
Well, you want to get out of there before Nex spawns again.
True, good point.
So, notepaper. Yeah.
Okay. And coming next week is raids. I think everyone's going to want to see that. God Wars Dungeon 1, the Kalfite Queen, and the Chaos Elemental. Oh boy, it's going to be story time next week with the Kalfite Queen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shane is going to
I just noted something.
I am going to go into story time going back to 2004.
Oh, back when you must have got a drop when it counted.
Oh, believe me, that was the goal.
Wow.
But more on that next week once we finally reveal what the drop rates for those blessed dragon chain bodies actually are at the Kalfite Queen.
Wow.
You can tell where I'm going with this story, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is how Shane became a millionaire.
Oh, heavens no.
Escape.
All right, so we're going to move on to tech news right now. No questions this week. So tech news-wise, we got that's interesting. I didn't think we were going to post a link to that in the notes. Fascinating. Apparently, that went to the spreadsheet. That's weird. That's not the link we wanted. But anyways, Windows 10 Fall Creator Update has arrived, and it'll start rolling out to people over the next weeks and months who use Windows 10. I assume you both use Windows 10?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So this is Microsoft's yearly huge update, or almost every 8-month huge update for Windows. This is titled the Windows Fall Creator Update version 1709. And you might be wondering, whoa, what does this have for me and how is this going to help my Windows experience? Well, it's got a number of new features. I don't know if they're going to be good for most of you guys listening here, but the biggest one that Microsoft wanted to make mainstream with this version of Windows 10 is the introduction of Windows Mixed Reality. So mixed reality is their term for covering anything that includes virtual reality, 3D worlds, and augmented reality using Microsoft's own HoloLens headset. This is the same kind of technology that's used in Pokemon Go, where you, of course, are in the you're looking through your phone and you see the real world, and then a Pokemon appears. So Microsoft has enhanced Windows 10 to take advantage of all of the virtual reality headsets out there from, you know, companies like Acer, Dell, HP, Oculus, and of course their own HoloLens headset with this here.
Delta Timber closed slightly down 34 cents.
Okay.
Interesting.
I apparently
HP closed up 24 cents or 1.1.
Did I ask for this?
To $21.96.
Did I ask my phone for this?
I didn't hear you ask for anything.
Okay.
Apparently, it thought you needed to know.
I just got the closing stock numbers for Dell and HP. Okay.
Well, you know, IT loves predicting things you need before you even know it.
All right. So in addition to mixed reality, Microsoft has also put an increased focus on Paint 3D, and they have added 3D viewing capabilities to view any 3D object that you can view with their mixed reality headsets. They've also added more objects for Paint 3D. And an example here that they give in this article shows Microsoft Edge, the browser, running in virtual reality. So you're sitting on your couch and you see your web browser appear on the wall in front of you. So that's an example of what you can do with Windows if you have one of these virtual reality headsets. So I don't know. I think virtual reality is coming into play. I don't know if this is the way people intend on using it, but this definitely seems like an update geared towards professionals. I know, Tanis, you've had experience with VR in the past.
Yeah.
You done anything else with it?
I haven't since that time, but I could see this being really beneficial. I mean, I really think that VR can be the bridge and a great enhancer for people that have different disabilities and stuff like that. I mean, I know it's not necessarily always in the forefront of the developer's mind, but it's actually really, really useful for that. So I could see that headset actually helping me be able to interact with the computer a lot easier.
Yeah, and so. I mean, I think at this point it's just a matter of getting the hardware prices down, and then you're going to be able to do a lot of interesting things with this new version of Windows 10. So
yeah.
I don't think it will come into my life. I'm more of a person that wants to keep, how do you say it, reality one thing and keep the virtual world separate. That I often take the bike instead of the car, and I enjoy having a computer in front of me with everything, and I don't find VR as yet as assisting as it could be, but this is a good step of showing its potential. Actually, I find it a little bit, I'm not going to laugh, but I find it a little bit funny seeing the picture they provided here, because I can't see it in my life, but at the same time, reaching out with the possibilities and showing what it's capable of is a very important thing when introducing things like this.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's the middle of the road option as well. Augmented reality or mixed reality viewers, Microsoft is calling it with their tablets and whatnot. And that's where Paint 3D and a lot of the 3D work comes in with Windows 10. So that's where the bulk of the large features have been with the Windows 10 Creator Update. Whoa, that's not good. My computer has just frozen.
Oh.
We can still hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, that's Google Chrome. Yeah, Google Chrome quit unexpectedly. How fun. But anyways.
See you next week.
Yeah, see you next week. Thankfully, it wasn't anything else that quit. But, you know, continuing with this down the path of Windows 10, I think one thing that everyone needs to look at for this version of Windows 10 isn't necessarily the VR stuff, but it's the new UI that we're going to start seeing going forward. Microsoft is constantly iterating on this Windows 10 interface, and you can see it in some applications like the Groove Music app, for example, a new design language that's coming in that's clearly been influenced by Windows Phone. Another one that does it and uses it quite a lot is the calculator. I don't know if you guys use the calculator daily, but that's another good way of looking at what Microsoft is going for forward with the Windows 10 interface. And I mean, other little things like the ability to pin pages from Microsoft Edge if you use the Edge browser to the taskbar, for example. They also have pretty much with this release all but signaled that Windows Phone is dead, because the first thing that I was asked upon logging in was if I wanted to pair my phone with Microsoft operating system. So, I mean, I have an iOS device and they have all the apps for, you know, Microsoft Office on iOS. So the idea behind this is that you can just transfer seamlessly back and forth between platforms. So that was also a huge signal here with this update that Windows Phone is probably dead. So, but
who would have thought of that?
Yeah, I mean, they tried, but it had so much promise. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens at the next Surface event scheduled for next week, I believe. So this update is in place and it'll start rolling out to people in the next few weeks to a month, depending on how active you are with your computer. All right. So our next story, hopefully we won't have any interruptions from Siri or the Google Chrome crashing. This next one deals with WPA too. And you guys probably heard about this this week that WPA2 is broken and it'll allow attackers to intercept your passwords and data, right?
And more importantly, your porn history.
Okay. All right.
That's the reporting one
thing,
I heard.
The one thing nobody wanted to admit.
So,
honest people here.
All right, this is called the crack attack, and basically what this is a weakness in the WPA2 protocol. So just a quick rundown here. WPA2 is the system that secures a wireless network with encryption that prevents the data being sent on the network from being read by prying eyes. Because, you know, you can have an open wireless network where nothing is encrypted and everyone can see the traffic that's flowing. That's really bad. Because if that was happening, you would be able to see passwords, emails, and websites you were going to that were unencrypted. WPA2 solves this problem and keeps you safe when you're browsing wirelessly on the internet. And that's why they say that, you know, coffee shop Wi-Fi access points that are open are so dangerous because anyone can read what you're doing if you're not encrypted. So this is a proof of concept exploit and it's called CRAC with the K. It's short for key reinstallation attacks. So this has existed in WPA for years. It was only discovered late last month and revealed this past Monday when the vulnerability was disclosed. The website that disclosed the vulnerability said it affects the core WPA2 protocol and is effective against devices running Android, Linux, and OpenBSD, and to a lesser extent, macOS and Windows. So the key point here is that Android and Linux are the most affected, and that is especially worrying because there are so many Android devices out there that are old and are no longer receiving updates. So those can be practically treated as insecure now. I'm talking about old Android devices from 2009, 2010, 2011. Now you might say, boy, but what do these Linux devices have any concern to me with? Well, if you have something that is running on an Internet of Things-based network, you know, say Wi-Fi-connected light bulbs or Wi-Fi-connected refrigerator, those are probably running some variant of Linux underneath. And as we all know, it's very hard to update software on the light bulb or refrigerator. So it's these devices that we really need to worry about with this. The updates that are required for macOS and Windows and iOS have been patched in Microsoft's most recent patch Tuesday and iOS 11. So if you're using iOS, macOS, or Windows and you're fully up to date, you are most likely going to be secure. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah, so most listeners of this podcast can have a good feeling to know that you're going to be secure here. I'm not going to go into the depths of what causes this vulnerability, but suffice to say, there was a unique encryption token generated, what is called a nonce, which basically means that it's a random number that's generated once, and it's supposed to be used once and then discarded, hence the nonce number once. it's used once, but it turns out that it was actually used more than once. And that has the potential to compromise the entire WPA2 encryption stack. Now, you might be wondering, why are iOS, Windows, and Macs somewhat more secure than this? Well, that is because this is largely a vulnerability on the client side, meaning your phone, your computer, your laptop. It is up to the clients to fix this in most cases. The only time an access point that you're connecting to, you know, if you go out to the coffee shop and you connect to an access point, the only time that access point can be compromised with this is if it is repeating a wireless connection. So that's why it's rare for a router to say need to be updated to this, like the router you plug into the wall to get your internet. That is likely not going to need an update. But if someone out there is using a wireless repeater, that does need an update. So the problem, of course, comes in is that, you know, you have so many old Android and Linux-based pieces of hardware out there that they're hard to update at this point. And that's what is going to be the huge target for these. So there we go. That is, in a nutshell, the issue with WPA2 this week. It has been fixed in Windows, iOS, and Mac, and is not believed to be vulnerable to the most serious of attacks, even if you are not patched. So that means is that most listeners of this podcast and most of you guys out there who play RuneScape are going to be fine when it comes in regards to this vulnerability. But it goes without saying that you should definitely be running your Windows updates and updating your smartphone and other devices to the most recent version of their operating system when you can.
Then I can stop worrying about my fridge getting taken over by hackers.
Well, I mean, the fridge is another story, because the fridge is going to be a hard thing unless you can't update it. So.
Oh, dear. What can my warm fridge beer. Getting attacked by?
No.
Yeah, warm beer. How can I survive in my own house with warm beer?
I don't know. There's going to be 300 million Americans just losing their freaking mind if that happened.
So,
and the washing machine.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I can't live without it.
Overall, our devices are nice and secure, right? But it's the light bulbs, the fridges. And you guys want to know the real horror story of what could be really vulnerable to this?
Home security.
There you go. Home security. You hit the nail on the head.
Ka-ching.
Yep. All right. Our last piece of tech news is some news regarding Apple, and that is that according to market research, U.S. buyers favor the iPhone 7 over the iPhone 8. Older iPhone 7 models are outselling the recent iPhone 8, and it's largely assumed that this is going to be because of the premium iPhone 10 that is launching in early November. And you might be wondering why this is the case, because, you know, normally Apple sets records with the amount of iPhones that are sold, but that's not the case here. AT&T in the U.S. said that last week its third quarter postpaid handset upgrades, so people on contract, were fewer than nearly 900,000 by over a year ago. And this was attributed to weak iPhone 8 demand. And because of this, many people are buying iPhone 7 instead of iPhone 8, given the lack of significant enhancements in the new phone. And feedback has also been received from stores that indicated that customers are waiting to purchase the iPhone 10 or to compare the iPhone 10 with other models before buying the iPhone 8. And, you know, this happened last month when Apple introduced the 8 and the 8 Plus, which are practically the same form factor-wise as the iPhone 7, but feature wireless charging and a stronger CPU inside. And, you know, people have a point here, because if you're looking for a powerful smartphone, you can get the iPhone 8, or for a bit of a price cut, you can get the iPhone 7, which starts at $549 USD. And there's nothing wrong with the iPhone 7, because Apple still feels their iPhone 6 is powerful enough and still sells the iPhone 6S and iPhone SE, which is the hardware from 2015. So we're getting to a point here.
And considering the development in technology nowadays. 2015 is already Stone Age.
Right.
So it's impressive.
And but
they're still singing.
But the reason they're selling it is because we're getting to a point where these smartphones are having chips that are rivaling the power of computers. The chip in the iPhone 8 is as powerful as the 13-inch MacBook Pro that Apple has released earlier this year in terms of actual numerical benchmark performance. So looking at it that way, there's no reason why an iPhone 7 isn't good enough, or even an iPhone 6, though you'll be able to keep it for less time.
Unless you are a tech nerd.
There you go.
Well, I mean, I'm happy. I have a 6 Plus, and I've always been happy since I've had it. And if you take care of things, it,
yeah,
you know, I mean, if you're not dropping
yeah.
it all the time,
that's right.
I really don't have a reason to replace it.
Yeah.
It,
like, I had my 5S for 4 years from when it came out until this year. And, I mean, it is still a good enough a device for social media and emails and whatnot. It just couldn't do anything beyond that that was, you know, a modern game, for example, right? So,
right.
And we talked about this not too long ago, Shane, that there are always people who need to get the modern stuff, the latest releases. And then we have the people who looks at the reviews, who looks what people are saying, the technical stuff. And then we have people like me who's not buying anything unless it's broken. Completely broken and to ash and dust.
Yeah. And I am on a 3 to 4 year cycle with my smartphones, I think. I think that's a good place for me. And it all comes down to when it becomes not powerful enough. And that's where the 5S was at. So, and there's also an interesting quote from this article that says, worrying about any small downtick in margins from the sale of the iPhone 7 or 8 is the wrong way to look at it, as the iPhone 10 is really the flagship device where we're going to see a strong upgrade cycle. So we'll have to wait until next month to see if this turns out to be true. But nonetheless, it appears as though the iPhone 8 is kind of just okay, you might buy this if you want a powerful device, but the iPhone 10 is where it's going to be. So
waiting for those reviews.
All right.
Unless you're me, of course.
You guys ready to move on to other things and wrap this one up?
Yeah.
I just want to say that my phone is probably on its last legs. And by last legs, it's next in being dust and completely broken down. So I have to make a gravestone for it soon.
That'd be really funny to see.
They actually had a joke about it on the 1st of April here, about a gravestone for mobiles, and actually they're making a graveyard for it, and you don't know how many people actually fell for that.
Okie dokie. So, our skill of the month update. Pranassi is still in first place with 4 million attack XP gained, Jamandy 52 with 2.3 million, and Flash is in third place with 1 million XP gained. Would have been interesting to do a Dimension of the Damned competition among our community, wouldn't it?
Yeah, oh, that would be cool.
I don't think Jagex.
You can do it next week if you want. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if Jagex gives us access to that, but it'd be interesting nonetheless. So.
Yeah.
All right, on to achievements of the week we go. I'll take the first bunch. Tycho, you take the middle, and Tanis, you take the ones on the 13th and after, okay?
Okay, 13th and after.
All right, so starting off on the 18th, we had I Like Slayer with 99 crafting. Also on the 17th, we had Jade Gizmo with 99 rune crafting. XOX Scotty XOX with 120 constitution, also on the 17th. Jade Gizmo also got 99 summoning, and I Like Slayer got 99 woodcutting. The pack got 99 fletching, and Jade Gizmo once again appearing got 99 magic. And to start us off on the 16th, Sorensen 57 got 200 million mining XP. Congratulations.
Ooh,
to you.
Nice. Yeah, there you go.
All right, Tyke.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, wait, it's my turn. Hi, I'm Weiss with 99 Invention. congratulations. And Cyan R with 99 divination on the 16th of October. Ray 66 with 99 runecrafting. Asifira with 99 smithing. I Herblore with 120 Herblore. And I actually attended his party. And he's a hardcore Iron Woman. So that 120 Herblore, huge grats to him.
Oh, wow.
That's an impeccable task for an Iron Man account.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. And moving on October 13th, Mama Mystic got 99 Fletching. Sorensen 57 with 120 Hunter on the 13th. Wow, it's really super busy. And Seabreeze 24 with 99 Agility on October 12th. And Cyan Jr. got 99 Magic on October 12th.
Good job, everyone. I like these achievements of the week. It might be my favorite segment of the show.
Yeah, it was a nice little good little batch here. I mean, for a off bonus, you know.
It's just that the community keeps going, that people are reaching their goal, that stuff is happening. Especially, I mean, it's a shame that it just says here, I Herblore 120 Herblore, but there's so much story behind it. The party, the fireworks. I mean, it was old school lightning fire in long rows again, and it was stars and everything. It was a huge party, believe me.
And I love to see the 99s and stuff, because it reminds me of coming up, and I like to still see that. You know, sometimes I think sometimes you get locked away in the max guild and you think, oh, everyone's max, you know, what are we gonna do now? And I love seeing the 99s come in.
Yeah, definitely. So I am even having problems with my 120 Herblore, so that's why that 120 in Herblore on Iron Man is all so amazing to me.
Yeah, wow.
You imagine how much farming that took? Whew.
Ooh, yeah, definitely. Wow. Definitely. Wow. All right.
It's just like looking at the ocean, endless.
So it's
never ending.
So it's time for Pick of the Week now. I have a Pick of the Week, and this is something that we talked about previously in the podcast, and it's something that the new version of iOS takes advantage of, iOS 11. One of the new features of iOS 11, and augmented by the new cameras on the iPhone 8 and the CPU and whatnot, is the ability to perform visual tasks faster with the camera and the CPU on the new iPhone 8 chip. And this technology also works on the iPhone 7 and whatnot as well. But to get the best experience, it's going to work best on the new chips that Apple puts out. And the experience we're talking about here is augmented reality, which is kind of similar to what we talked about in the Microsoft story, except this is on your smartphone. So on the App Store, there's a whole selection of augmented reality applications. And this basically allows you to see a physical object in the world as if you're looking through your smartphone screen as a window into that world. So one of the things that I have been looking for and have been looking for quite frequently since I got the new iPhone is augmented reality applications. And one of the more interesting ones I found, and it's a really simple game, it only takes, you know, a minute or so to play at a time, is called Stack AR, of course, for augmented reality. So Stack Augmented Reality. And what you basically do with this is you point your phone at the floor or any table, and you effectively try to stack a series of blocks. And as you stack your blocks, the block you have to stack gets smaller each time you successfully stack it. So the idea behind it is that you start off by stacking very large cubes, but as you progress, it just keeps getting smaller and smaller. So the idea is to try and stack as much as you can. And What makes it really neat is that normally you would be stacking this in a 3D environment where you would just be looking at, you know, a generic, like a generic background, maybe a picture or something, right? But with augmented reality, you see it right in front of you on your kitchen table, on your living room floor. So in some ways, it's almost a way of increasing the interaction of these games. And, you know, there's nothing really too complicated about this. This isn't going to be the next Pokemon Go or anything like that. But it is a good example of what augmented reality is capable of on the new iOS devices. I'm currently also testing a few other augmented reality games, but I haven't got to the point yet where I can reliably say that I want them to be the pick of the week. So that's why I thought I'd start off with something small this week, and that's Stack AR, because it introduces you to augmented reality in a very simple way. So you can find this on the iOS App Store if you're an iOS user, and it should work on all devices running iOS 11, which is where they brought in their new augmented reality technology. So this kind of just goes to show that you don't need, you know, a $500 headset to do virtual reality or even augmented reality. You can just do augmented reality with your smartphone. So lots of interesting things happening with augmented reality on mobile devices. The other one, believe it or not, that was a candidate for pick of the week this week was IKEA's app, because IKEA's new app lets you place furniture in your house using augmented reality. But I thought, okay, the listeners of RSBNB Update probably don't need furniture from IKEA, so we're going to start off with something simple.
Sweden.
Yeah, I know.
Construction update.
But
yeah. Oh, yeah, construction update. But why didn't I know anything of this? Wow, you really enlightened me there, Shane.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the case is on Android for augmented reality, or if you guys have the similar kind of apps like this, but it's just a fun little thing to play with. And I think my record for stacking is somewhere in the high 20s at this point, because it's not only a matter of stacking it when it appears, it's a matter of reaction time, because the blocks start moving faster as you progress through the game. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know, Tanis, you might like to try it.
Yeah, that sounds kind of cool.
How many hours have you been playing this?
I'd probably say about an hour in total, perhaps, just because the game sessions are so short. Each game lasts under a minute, so.
Oh, okay. Wait, yeah. So that means at least 60 times?
Yeah, I've probably played it around 60 or 70 times.
So. Impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But on the other hand, I played a lot of games for a long period of time. I mean, RuneScape is the primary example of that.
Yeah.
RuneScape's measured in years, I think, not even hours.
Anyway, so that's the pick of the week, Stack AR on iOS. So
next week, let's have pick of the week, how electric can openers will take over the world.
They very well might if they're being hacked as a result of these WPA vulnerabilities.
You can have killers in your house without knowing it. Come here next week, finding out the 90 ways your kitchen equipment can hurt you very bad.
All right, so what have we been up to this week? Let's start with you, Tanis.
Dimension of the Damned. I've been spending basically 2 days of prep for every session, and I've done 2 sessions, and hopefully we'll do some more, another one tomorrow, and then I'll probably stream a bunch of Dimension of the Damned on Saturday. So,
what's your Twitch account, just so we can tell everyone what that is?
Oh, it's Tanis79.
All right, Tanis79 on Twitch. There we go.
Yep.
Best of luck getting into the top 1,000.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will be here to support you.
Thanks.
How about you, Tycho? What you been up to?
Dimension of the Damned. And it's been a roller coaster. I was there when it was too easy. I was there when it was too hard. And now I'm there when it's just right. And I have a whole tale to tell about everything. I mean, I will try to keep this short, if you don't mind a 50-minute short version.
Please.
But was that for mercy, or was that begging me to tell everything?
Oh, just tell me what you think you should tell me.
Okay. So what I think everybody should know about is that I really love Dimension of the Damned, that it's so simple, and yet it requires you to adapt to the new situation. I mean, I had to start trading and picking up people's drops, and that quickly gave me the tier 40 armor and equipment I needed.
Right.
And then later tier 50 with arrows as the non-official currency. And then at a later stage, I had to do runs for Runitor and start smithing to get those rune arrows that get the really high damage. But the real story I want to tell was after the Tuesday's update, you just log in. You got a lot of zombies just peeking over the Falador wall, and you are wondering why are they not just jumping over.
That's the one we wanted the picture
the
of, right?
City and crush the bone of every single living creature, making you jump into the river and hide down there where the zombies are eating the brains out of every. Well, I can go on for a couple of hours, but yeah, they're basically surrounding Falador, and I had to get out. So I did what everybody does in the TV series. I went through the back door. And it worked. It worked. The back door always works. So there were a couple of alternatives. You could go through the Falador west wall. You can just jump over it. Or you can go through the tunnel in the southwest part of Falador. That's a couple of options. So I went there and tried to make a run for it, but there were quite a horde outside, so I had to run for my life, ending up inside a crafting guild and attracting a lot of zombies. So I was basically barricaded there for 10 minutes before I got the courage to just rush out and go to Remington. But there was a lot of zombies there, so I tried staying outside Melsoth, the Mad Maze.
So basically what you're saying is that the game finally started living up to its dangerous name.
Yeah, the Apocalypse. What is that? Dimension of the Apocalypse would be more fitting.
Oh, there's a good name.
And, yeah. And running around until I finally found myself in a somewhat safe for now area, and that was Armadale Tower, and that was the perfect location. And the reason for that is because it's surrounded by a fence and you can shoot through it with arrows.
Oh.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the interior has furniture that not only prevents the boss zombies from spawning, but you can also get the zombies stuck behind the furniture even if they manage to get inside. And there I found a player called Klee. Shout out to him. And we basically became a dynamic duo, back to back, fighting horde after horde coming through. And as I mentioned before, those zombies can smell you from 2 map squares away. So slowly but surely, many zombies came crawling down to us and wanted to eat our brains. But this was the perfect location, so we started fighting back to back and really cooperating. And there was not a single thought in my head about high scores or anything, but just survive. And
were you on one of your sessions
of
when you did this?
Came running. running and say, oh, there's two guys fighting. I need help to survive. And for us, it was basically a horde incoming. and just, I don't know how we managed to survive that, but we did. 35 minutes in, and we had finally, one, cleared the area, and two, managed to create a group of six people who were still alive.
Oh, wow, that's pretty good. I mean, that kind of goes to the community, the community involvement as well with that, eh?
Oh, yes. And at that point, we could go to a second stage. And if you... And since it was NXT, everybody could just take a look around and see the humongous amount of boss zombies being all around us, attracted to other players hiding everywhere. So we could actually go to the point that we picked one of them, voked them, got them close to the tower, and then could rain fire down upon them without them touching us. And that was perfect. That was perfect. So, and that was basically the safer part of the operation. But while this was happening, hordes were still spawning and hordes were still coming. But now we had it somewhat under control. And after a whole hour, we finally managed to get our player count of like 10 or 15, depending on how many died. But Armadale Tower was now finally a safe area where player could come and kill zombies for everybody's enjoyment. And that's my tale. And I will end it with that I recorded my session of this whole Armadale Tower defense apocalypse. And when I came back later that day, I was wondering, okay, I have a couple of clannies who recorded their session too. I wondered how well I'm doing in the high scores. I checked it, and I was ranked 21.
And that's the story of Tycho Elf at Dimension of the Damned. Rank 21, you're around rank 80 now, I think. So you should be going to the final with that rank probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I doubt that 950 players will outrank me, but I mean, I don't mind actually if 900 outranks me. That only shows that people are getting really involved in Dimension of the Damned, and they should, because it's a real fun minigame, if I'm allowed to call it that.
Yeah, that's what I would say it is. So.
Yeah, so it would make me happy. But let's see how the finals goes. I'm starting to prepare my strategy. And I'm not going to give away any secrets here and now to all listeners. I'm sorry to say that you are on your own this time. But don't give up hope, whatever you do. I mean, even if you got 10 zombies running after you and you think that there are only two guys there who are doing a good work that maybe can save you, well, there's hope.
Yeah, there's always hope. There's always hope.
But I'm getting the shivers thinking about it. I even got a picture here.
All right. Well, thank you, Tycho. I think you had the most in-depth experience at Dimension of the Damned this week for us. We'll have to see how far you go with that. As for me this week on RS, I did a bit of Dimension of the Damned, but my primary focus has still been on training invention, getting those fishing rods done, and did some ranged at the Dark Peace as well. And oh boy, that Demon Horde necklace is something else, isn't it? When you combine that with the Bone Crusher.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Almost too overpowered.
I prefer the Saradomin sword, actually. I sometimes use it even nowadays because if you make it passive, it's OP.
Oh, interesting.
If you place the Saradomin Godsword on the Saradomin Altar in God Wars Dungeon, you make its special attack passive, meaning you can't activate it, but you have a 25% chance per hit to heal 3% of your player and a certain amount of health depending on the hit. And 3% of your player, that's a lot. And let me put it this way. I can have full player output, everything protection, I can have boosts, and I can have healing and, well, everything at full output. And if I have high DPS, then I will stay at full player at all times. That's how OP it is.
Yeah, and I think that might be something worth looking into a rebalance at some point in the future, but that's a topic for another day. So
yeah, or you can be just like me and take your Falador shield and have it with you all days, because it replaces player potions.
There you go. Alrighty, well, we'll be back next week to sum up any further thoughts on Dimension of the Damned before the finale, and also...
It will be before the finale.
Yeah, before the finale.
But as it comes out, it's maybe over?
Well,
maybe?
We'll have to wait and see. I might get it out early. We'll see. Thank you, Tanis, for joining us on this. Always great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Come back next week.
I had withdrawals, man.
Everyone does. And Tycho and I will be back next week to talk about whatever Jagex brings us. And until then, thank you for sharing your time with us. And if you want to chat with us in the middle of the week, we're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes in-game. And we're also on Twitter at RSBNB if you want to engage and chat with us that way. Or if you just want full show notes for this podcast, that's at update.rsbnb.com. See you next week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.